Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Almost a decade ago, a man with a beard in the mountains stopped America in its tracks on 9/11. Today, Osama bin Laden is dead, we're told, shot dead by U.S. forces in Pakistan, his body dropped in the sea. It has been a long road from the stunned bewilderment and anger of September 11th, 2001. Rage, war, a steep learning curve, and now this. This hour on point, the death of Osama bin Laden and the American journey in these last nearly 10 years. You can join the conversation. What was your response to the news of Osama bin Laden's death? What have we learned in this hard decade? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. It has been a long road. Here, September 14th, 2001, just days after the attacks, President George W. Bush famously visited the site of the fallen New York City Twin Towers and addressed the Ground Zero rescue workers by bullhorn.
I can hear you. The rest of the world hears you. And the people... And the people who knocked these buildings down will hear all of us soon.
Brave words on a bewildering day. And here, late last night, after the news broke of Osama bin Laden's death, back in New York, crowds gathered in Times Square. President Obama said the American people did not choose this fight.
As a country, we will never tolerate our security being threatened, nor stand idly by when our people have been killed. We will be relentless in defense of our citizens and our friends and allies. We will be true to the values that make us who we are. And on nights like this one, we can say to those families who have lost loved ones to Al-Qaeda's terror, justice has been done.
The president last night. We're looking at the long arc of Americans' thinking, feeling, and sort of security situation in these last nearly 10 years in this hour. You can join us at 800-423-TALK. Joining us right now from New York is Tom Brokaw, anchor and managing editor of the NBC Nightly News from 1982 to 2004. He was at the anchor desk the day the Twin Towers came down, followed all the aftermath, author of The Greatest Generation, now special correspondent for NBC News. Tom Brokaw, welcome back to On Point. Thanks for being
here
today.
Thanks, Tom. It's good to be here.
With us from Washington, Lawrence Wilkerson, chief of staff to former Secretary of State Colin Powell. He served in the Army for 31 years, retired in 1997 as a colonel, teaches national security affairs at George Washington University. Lawrence Wilkerson, welcome back to you as well. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
And with us from Hanover, New Hampshire, On Point News analyst Jack Beatty. Welcome, Jack.
Hello, Tom. Tom and Lawrence.
Tom Brokaw, take us back to that day, just for a sense of the arc we've been on. You were there at the anchor desk, watching with the rest of the country as these things came down. Could you ever have imagined it would be nearly 10 years before this moment of justice, as the president calls it?
Well, I don't think on that day that I was imagining anything beyond what we're going to learn the next moment, because as everyone will remember, it was all so unexpected, and we didn't know originally where it was coming from or what would happen next. I don't think in the course of my journalistic career that I've ever been so far out over an unknown sea without a net of any kind. I remember vividly Jim Mikuševski coming on the air and saying, I don't want to panic anyone, but I've just heard a loud explosion here at the Pentagon. Seems to be on the far side of the building. And then, of course, we heard about the fight going down in Shanksville, Pennsylvania, and we didn't know what was going to happen next. So at that moment during the day, I wasn't thinking in advance, how are we going to resolve this? I just knew that we were at war. It was the most serious attack on this country and within the continental borders in our history. And when we began to understand that it was Al-Qaeda, we knew the full depths of Islamic rage, and it reminded me on that day, looking backward more than forward, of how we didn't respond to what happened in Tanzania, we didn't respond to what happened to our embassy in Kenya, the USS Cole, to the Khobar barracks bombing, bombing, but now we were at war and there would be a price to be paid.
You watched all the anger and American action that rose up in response to that day in Afghanistan and then Iraq. You'll remember Tora Bora. Osama bin Laden was there. There was hot pursuit, and then he was gone. Here we are, nearly 10 years later. Now he's dead. His body dropped in the sea. Your thoughts today, Tom, as you take, with the rest of us, take this on board.
Well, I think that we have to stand back. I mean, first of all, there should be jubilation that, in fact, he finally was found and that he was killed and dispatched so swiftly and so efficiently by U.S. Special Forces because he had been an enduring symbol for Islamic rage and for the banality of that attack on this country. But at the same time, we have to remember that we still have an enormous investment in that part of the world, in Afghanistan and also in Iraq, and in other areas we don't even know about, where Special Forces troops are on the ground, because Islamic rage, where it exists, has not been extinguished. We just had an attack last week in Morocco in a cafe very popular with Western tourists. I just got back from the region from, I was in Iraq, in Jordan, and in Saudi Arabia. And, of course, everyone in all of those countries, as well as throughout the region, looking at what's going on in Libya, what happened in Egypt, what happened in Tunisia, what's going on in Syria. They know that the area is never going to be the same again. They just don't know what the end game is. A lot of young people who are in the streets want more democracy. They want less of what Osama bin Laden represented. But at the same time, we have to be realistic about this. There are still very radical elements in that part of the world that are extremely well organized.
Though, as you say, ironically, at now the point of Osama bin Laden's death, bin Laden himself kind of eclipsed in the streets with these amazing demonstrations going on. Lawrence Wilkerson, there in Washington, you were very much in the halls of power when 9/11 unfolded. Did you ever think it would take so long for the United States U.S. forces to find, dispatch, as Tom Brokaw says, Osama bin Laden?
I did not. I thought it would probably happen sooner. I knew it would be inevitable that it would happen. And I must tell you that when I first learned of it and the method by which it was carried out, it took me back to the time when Kofor Black, then director of counterterrorism for the State Department, stood in my office and with some anger and some fuming, and if you know Kofor, that could be his normal demeanor at times, exclaimed to me how this very same act could have been carried out in 97 or 98. Granted, it would have been a lot more difficult to carry out and a bigger challenge because we didn't have troops on the ground, we didn't have overflight rights, et cetera, like we have now in great profusion. But nonetheless, he described a similar type operation that would have done it inside Afghanistan and that he assigned a fairly high level of probability of success to. But because of bickering between the CIA and the Defense Department over who would arm Predator and et cetera, and also because of some objections from Delta, as he put it, wanting to know the nails that were in the door of Obama's house.
You mean Delta Forces?
Yeah, Delta Forces, mm-hmm. the penultimate or the ultimate special operating force. This could have been done before, and it would have saved all those lives. And as important to me, it would have saved about $3 trillion, which is what we've expended to this point to essentially respond to an act that maybe cost him $500K.
But who knew then? I mean, Bill Clinton did unleash cruise missiles. They didn't get bin Laden. But who could have known?
Well, we did know. The guys in the counterterrorism cell at the CIA, the guys and gals elsewhere in the intelligence community, George Tenet gave warning mm-hmm. after warning. We had Dick Clark, who was essentially disempowered by being moved down from his cabinet status to a lower status when George Bush came in. All of these people were saying there was going to be an attack on the United States. Well, before that, they knew pretty much to a pinpoint on one or two occasions where bin Laden was, and instead of authorizing the kind of strike that occurred in Pakistan and that got him, they authorized some cruise missiles to go bounce the rubble, as one person put it to me, in Afghanistan and, of course, in the Sudan. It would have been, I admit, it would have been a much more difficult operation at that time, much more of a challenge. And yet, it would have been a similar operation, and there's no reason why it couldn't have been effective had it been carried out and had a little luck adhered thereto.
All those years ago. Jack Beatty, your thoughts on this day with the news of Osama bin Laden's death?
I'm struck with the degree of his success. You know, if you look back to his October 2004 videotape, he said, "We bled Russia for 10 years until it went bankrupt and was forced to withdraw in defeat." He went on, "We are continuing with America in the same policy to make it bleed profusely to the point of bankruptcy." Colonel Wilkerson just mentioned the $3 trillion. For the first time, we went to war without raising taxes, in fact, cutting taxes. Debt soared from $6 trillion in 2003 to $10 trillion in 2008 and up another $4 trillion since. And then his second goal was to provoke U.S. intervention in the Muslim world. They were very clear about that. And all that that has cost us, and over nearly 6,000 dead now in both the wars. And the third goal, of course, was, as he said, to attach a fear premium to oil. And that isn't the only reason gas prices are high. But ever since then, the trend has been in that direction. So this one man has had quite a success, it seems to me, in his master strategy against America.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the death of Osama bin Laden and the American journey in these last nearly 10 years. With Tom Brokaw, he was anchor and managing editor of NBC Nightly News for many years until 2004 at the anchor desk on 9/11, the day of Osama bin Laden's kind of terrible masterstroke of terrorism against the United States. He joins us today from New York. Lawrence Wilkerson is with us, chief of staff to former Secretary of State Colin Powell. He's been right in the middle of the debate over the American response in all the years since. And our own Jack Beatty is here. Early this morning, crowds gathered at Ground Zero in Lower Manhattan singing their support of the news that bin Laden was dead nearly 10 years after the 9/11 attacks. President Obama said justice has been done, but it was not with a gloating tone. Here he is from the White House last night.
I've made clear, just as President Bush did shortly after 9/11, that our war is not against Islam. Bin Laden was not a Muslim leader. He was a mass murderer of Muslims. Indeed, al-Qaeda has slaughtered scores of Muslims in many countries, including our own. So his demise should be welcomed by all who believe in peace and human dignity.
Tom Brokaw, Lawrence Wilkerson, Jack, let's hear from a couple of our listeners as we dive in here. Chip in Columbia, South Carolina. Thank you for calling. Chip, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I'm elated. I mean, because quiet as it's kept, I'm former Air Force Special Operations Command, which is headquartered at Herbert Field, Florida. And it plays a part in JSOC and all that. People always hear Special Forces and all, and I'm glad JSOC's time has come due because it's also the USS OCOM. It's really complicated. It's a special operation, but JSOC is basically it's Joint Special Operations Command. It has, you know, Navy units, Marine units, Air Force units, and
Chip,
Army
did you think it would take this long, Chip? Had you given up hope that you might ever see this happen with Osama bin Laden?
Well, it's kind of like I remember, you know, because President Obama's done what's unprecedented, what, you know, the Bush Jr. or, you know, the Clinton administration can do. He found him and he wiped him out and everything, but Did I think it was going to take this long? No. And actually, you know, to be candid with you and all that, and because I'm former, and I hope others, you know, former special officers are calling too, I was thinking everybody really forgot it and all that. But you know what? Barack Obama is a special president, and God bless him. I'm going to vote him into office again, but I'm elated. I mean, I was up Twittering, listening to people, all the people with their flags. Of course, in my neighborhood, I couldn't, because I probably would have got beat down, special ops and all. But, people had flags flying. They were so happy. I remember when I got called back to active duty September 11th.
Mm-hmm.
And my heart kind of, you know, I felt really sad for all the people, but this is closure for all the people September 11th that lost loved ones, you know, just kids and fathers, sons, daughters, uncles, you know, aunts and everything like that. And
yeah,
for me, that played a part in it. I was glad, but I salute everybody that's active duty right now, particularly my unit, Air Force Special Operations Command.
Chip, thank you very much for your call. Let me get one more right here. Maureen in Emmitsburg, Iowa. Maureen, you're on the air.
Yes. Hello, and Semper Fi from the heartland of the USA. As a mother of two U.S. Marines who have survived five deployments,
wow.
Today is a day of celebration. I feel that this shows how the United States can be patient. We can execute a fine, fine military operation, not just withdraw drones and dropping some bombs, but we can actually go in with choppers and execute a mission and get the terrorist where he is. And I, speaking for my sons as well as for all of those who have served in the military, as well as those who have lost their lives, whether it's at Ground Zero or around the world, I am just extremely proud today.
Maureen, we thank you for your son's service. We hope they stay safe, and thank you for your call. Tom Brokaw, you hear the elation there from Chip in South Carolina, the pride from Iowa, the note of celebration we heard earlier, more than a note. All that is there. At the same time, after all these years, it has to be tempered by the cost of everything that has transpired.
That's true, and no one's borne a greater cost than military families in this country. It's been something that has really been on my mind for some time. It's become a bit of a crusade to remind the rest of the country that 99% of us are not asked to really make any sacrifices. 1% of the population in uniform, in harm's way. You heard the Emmitsburg, Iowa mother talking about several deployments that they've had. I think she said five. That's not unusual.
It's a lot.
And it's very, very difficult duty over there in Afghanistan as it was in Iraq. I just got back from Iraq, and in fact, our troops are still in harm's way there. There were three people killed the week before I was there, and then a number of them were killed at a checkpoint in the Green Zone. So these are the two longest wars in our history. This is a big victory because we have removed the symbol of 9/11, the mastermind for it, the man who took such outrageous credit for it. But there's still work to be done, and we still have to resolve what our role is in that part of the world, which is going through its own kind of transformation from the ground up and trying to work it out on the streets and in whatever passes for the new parliament. So this is going to define our foreign policy for some time, and my own strong feeling is that it's time for a new strategic review, both politically and militarily, in that part of the world, and I think this is an opportunity to start that process if it's not already underway.
Great to have that opportunity. Of course, there are already timetables that are laid out that should take American forces out of Afghanistan, out of Iraq, but we'll see how that goes. Lawrence Wilkerson, I want to come to you on our caller who says, you know, President Obama did it. Well, a lot of people worked on this for a long time. The president certainly sent a lot more troops into Afghanistan, and he certainly, I guess, kicked up the drone activity and maybe more than that inside Pakistan. But what about the credit for what has happened in the last 24 hours with Osama bin Laden?
Well, I think Tom's points were very well made, and I share his concern, especially over the look, you got two calls. They both were from military or military-related people. Bush on that debris pile in New York in September after the attack said they'll hear from all of us soon. Well, they've heard from less than 1% of us, really. And that concerns me that we have so few people who are willing to shoulder the ultimate burden of prosecuting any kind of conflict, but particularly this kind. We've got, 299 million, 311 million, whatever you say is not the population. We've got that many people who've kind of ridden on the backs of these young men and women who are just doing time after time after time. President Obama picked the right war. He said in his campaign he would, and he did. The right war was, the war in Afghanistan. That's where al-Qaeda was resident there in Pakistan. And so in that sense, he made the right decision. But we've got a bigger foreign policy issue here to deal with. I don't think we're leaving Afghanistan or Iraq. And we could go all day long about why we can't afford to now that we have boots on the ground in a very critical area where, in western Iraq, for example, the latest estimates are $100 billion and maybe $200 and maybe even at the outside $300 billion barrels of oil. That's the reason we went to Iraq. To a certain extent, it has the same kind of implications for Afghanistan with regard to the Turkmenistan, Afghanistan, India, Pakistan gas pipeline and other pipelines that are contemplated. So we're not leaving out of place. Now, our physical situation is going to make it very difficult for us to remain there and remain in Germany and Korea and elsewhere. So this is going to be a time of retrenchment. And as we do that, out of necessity, because we've spent so much money, we've also got to think about this foreign policy and what we're going to do, how we're going to take advantage of the movements of basically young people in that region of the world. 70% of the population is under 30. We've got to do something to back off this policy pole we've been on of supporting any dictator for oil and begin to get on the other policy pole, which is we're the shining city on a hill, and we believe in freedom and democracy and all these values we espouse, but not at the point of the bayonet. We need to help these people find freedom, find liberty, find democracy, but not at the point of the bayonet. So got to be two major moves here. One is a little more sharing of the difficulties, I think, and the other is, as Tom said, a revamping and reshaping of our foreign policy to correspond with the realities in the world now.
Jack Beatty, certainly not everybody had their feet in those boots on the ground, but as Tom Brokaw and Lawrence Wilkerson point out, everybody is going to feel the burden of the cost of prosecuting these wars after that. Worse than slap in the face, that, you know, the 3,000 dead on 9/11. This is a burden that the country is going to carry for a long, long time.
Oh, that $3 trillion is going to be, it'll come out of our prosperity for the indefinite future. I was struck by a comment made by a former Afghan prime minister just before the Taliban, quoted in the Wall Street Journal. He said, "The Americans have achieved their goal of arresting or killing Osama. And now Americans have no reason to stay in Afghanistan." Well, that's pretty blunt. But I think that perception is going to grow politically.
Which one?
That we have no reason to be in Afghanistan. Colonel Wilkerson said we fought the right war in Afghanistan. Well, but Osama was killed in Pakistan. And according to the papers, there are only 100 al-Qaeda in the mountains of Afghanistan. And yet we have this massive 150,000 NATO expeditionary force there, propping up this corrupt government, and I think that this perception of, well, we've got them, why are we there? Even if you can sophisticate it and say, well, the Taliban is still there and they're still a threat and so on, I think this is going to further weaken support for the Afghanistan deployment, and for the sake of those military families, I say, high time.
Tom Brokaw, what about it? We all saw after 9/11 the enormous urge to go out and hit somebody, hit bin Laden. Do you see a come home America mood coming in now, maybe further pushed by the death of bin Laden?
Yeah, my guess is that there will be a push to remove as many of our troops as possible from Afghanistan, but at the same time, as I indicated a moment ago, I was just in the region, and what I was told by very senior American military commanders in Iraq is that they do expect Prime Minister Maliki to ask them to leave troops behind because of the new uncertainty in the region. He was paying very close attention to what was going on in Libya, in Tunisia, in Egypt, and then in Syria, and it gave him an added sense of urgency about forming a government. But the indication that I got from our Americans, most senior American military people, was that they thought that he would come to them sometime before the summer and say, look, you can't send everybody home. I'm going to need help for contingency purposes, if for no other reason. I've been going to that part of the world for 40 years, and I've never known it to be as seismic as it is at the moment. It's just all the plates are moving. No one knows how they're going to settle. That's a little disconcerting as well. We can all be cheered by what appears to be the democratic sentiment of the people in the streets, but it's not a region with a tradition of Jeffersonian democracy. And we don't know who the next generation of leaders may be. Already we We do know in Egypt, for example, that the Muslim Brotherhood has a leg up because they've been organized for a long time. But we're in for a long haul there. And it's very important to have somebody who was such a powerful symbol for the most extreme elements in that part of the world, Osama bin Laden, now removed, getting finally his just due, shot in the face and buried summarily at sea. But it doesn't mean it's going to. The sun's going to rise tomorrow morning, and the flowers will bloom. It's going to be a tough region for a long time.
And surely, these last nearly 10 years have taught us that military has a big role, but it doesn't necessarily bring immediate solutions. Here you were, Tom. This is back on September 11th, 2001, on that day when this decade began, in a sense, to unfold with all the history we now know. Tom Brokaw, September 11th, 2001.
The terrorists use hijacked civilian airliners and their passengers as guided missiles in their attack. The most serious attack on this country since Pearl Harbor. And tonight, the dead still are being counted. An unknown number still are missing. This has been one of the darkest days in America, and it is not yet over.
Tom Brokaw, we've just got you for another couple of minutes here. I mean, you've looked back on big generational times and changes, the World War II generation, greatest generation, as you dubbed it. What's your sense of how this country's sense of itself, its place in the world, its capacity in the world, maybe even its destiny, have changed in this last decade since Osama bin Laden's big attack?
Well, there were two different kinds of wars. For one thing, this one is a classic example of asymmetrical warfare, where you have a smaller unit using unconventional weapons to make surgical strikes on the United States and count on a great ripple effect, which in fact occurred when World War II broke out. We have the mendacity of the Nazi regime led by Adolf Hitler had gobbled up a great deal of Europe, was closing in on Great Britain, and then from the east we had the Japanese attacking Pearl Harbor. So the world really was in peril. This time it was directed at us, and there were no front lines, there were no states to declare war on, so it was a different kind of context altogether. And I dare say that I think that what happened in north of Islamabad with the taking out of Osama bin Laden is also symptomatic of what the new military is all about. Smaller units operating with stealth and great lethal firepower, making these surgical strikes. You don't have the great front lines anymore or the B-52s.
But Tom, let me ask you, yeah, if I may, because we've just got you for a minute. I mean, the lesson that the country took, you certainly kind of framed it this way, out of World War II was, we're great. What's the lesson that we've taken out of this decade?
I think that we have been in a little bit of an identity crisis in this country for the last 8 or 9 years. We've been fundamentally altered by those attacks. I mean, I have granddaughters who are 14 and 12, and I looked at them the other day, and I thought, they've only known a world in which they have to go through magnetometers everywhere. And there have been constraints on them. It doesn't mean that they're not having a very rich childhood, but it is much different. And I think part of the reason for the elation that we're seeing across the country with the taking out of Osama bin Laden is that people are saying, hey, we can still do it. Look at that operation, how efficient it was and how good they were at what they did. And it was an identifiable and important target for us, and we got it done. I said earlier today, spring break is over. We had the wedding last week. We have the Donald Trump foolishness should be put to rest now. Let's get on with the serious stuff. Solving the economy, kind of cooling, if you will, warming up the political deep freeze that's going on in Washington, cooling off a lot of the tempers and finding some common ground to move forward.
Tom Brokaw, longtime anchor for NBC News, thanks for joining us. Lawrence Wilkins and Jack Beatty, stand by. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the death of Osama bin Laden after all these years and the American journey in this last nearly decade since 9/11. Our news analyst Jack Beatty is with us today, and with us from Washington, Lawrence Wilkerson, Chief of Staff to former Secretary of State Colin Powell, retired U.S. Army colonel. He's been right in the middle of the enormous security questions that burst upon the United States, in particular after 9/11, but as you've said in this hour, even before. Let's go to Ellisburg, New York, and Mike. Mike, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
Tom, I am a veteran of Vietnam, the U.S. Army's 173rd Airborne Brigade. For the last 20 years, I have served on Fort Bragg and Pope Air Force Base in North Carolina, and I have no doubt that Fort Bragg was involved in this situation somehow. Mm. I am very thankful. I've always been optimistic that we were going to get him. If he didn't die of natural causes first, I was optimistic we were going to get him. People like to think that the U.S. is impatient, that they cannot wait, that people, but I had no doubt that we were eventually going to get him. I am thankful. It's a quiet kind of thankfulness, but I am thankful for his death. What I am is immensely proud of the United States Armed Forces that brought this about. Somebody mentioned, how did we get helicopters in?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I thought, hey, we got guys on the ground in North Vietnam at Son Tê. We got guys on the ground in Iran during the hostage crisis. Those did not work out the way we wanted them to. But surely and certainly the lessons from those operations helped in today's operations. And we have an incredible military. I am so proud to be able to serve them on Bragg and Pope. I have served hundreds of thousands of guys and girls who've gone overseas. I've served their families. Unfortunately, I've served the families of those who've died.
What about the price? What about the price, Mike? We hear your quiet thankfulness, and that seems like maybe a pretty good phrase for today. But what about the price? How do you weigh everything? I mean, price including in blood, those deaths you've seen.
Right, and that's what I think about. The money is, you know, we will suffer tremendously from the money, but it is the people. And I, you know, knowing those who have lost, it's tough. It's tough. If you've ever been to a funeral for a military male or female, it is tough. And I mean, the tears are there. Was it necessary? Sometimes it is. Now, unfortunately, the U.S. has to lead the way. That's the thing. The U.S. leads the way. As much as they knock the United States all over the world, the U.S., they look to the United States to lead the way. And because we lead the way, we typically suffer the most in terms of blood casualties and pay the most, obviously, as well. I don't think we can get rid of that. You know, it as far as how much longer, and as others were talking, and I thought so as well, it's not finished. It is not finished. There's a lot going on there, out there. We still have people in harm's way. We're not going to pull up stakes completely and leave.
Well, hopefully we are learning along that way, though. And, Mike, I appreciate your call today. All kinds of reaction to the death, the killing of Osama bin Laden. Some Republicans looking back to George W. Bush and looking to give big credit there. Fox News and their homepage presentation online featuring George Bush, not so much President Obama. This morning on NBC's Today Show, though, Congressman Peter King, Republican from New York, chairman of the House Homeland Security Committee, said President Obama had succeeded in what had been deemed the top priority in his era of the war on terror.
Let me give President Obama, tremendous credit for this. He was the commander-in-chief. He's the one who authorized this operation. This whole situation began under President Bush. It was continued and now carried to a conclusion, very successful conclusion, by President Obama, and he deserves full credit.
Lawrence Wilkerson in Washington talked to us for a moment today about credit here. President Obama spoke in the first person a lot last night. I ordered this. I ordered that. I met on this. Is that appropriate? It's been a long effort here.
Colin Powell used to say to me, don't use the vertical pronoun, particularly if you're a minister or the president. I didn't care for that too much, but I agree with the other callers who offered their compliments to the president for sticking with this and authorizing what he did. I would say, as I think your caller from New York was implying, we shouldn't revel in revenge. I know there are a lot of people who feel happy and they want to be ecstatic and they want to celebrate. Well, that's not normally the kind of characteristic one associates with a great power. With great power, you associate humility and magnanimity, which I will admit we have been reluctant to show over the past decade or so, but we need to go back to showing that. This guy was a mass murderer. I don't like phrases like Islamic rage either. He was not a representative of Islam. He was a representative of some of the same idiocy, indeed, we have within our own culture and our own country, this extremism, especially based on religious tenets, that permeates some of the mad people in the world. He just chose to take it a little bit further and to start killing people. We should all be happy that he's gone for that fact, but not for the fact that the great power suddenly spent $3 trillion and got this guy. I think a little humility, a little magnanimity, and appreciation for those brave and courageous young men and women who brought this about is called for.
Let's go to Fred in Ellsworth, Maine. Fred, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Is that you, Tom?
Yes, it is, sir. What's okay. on your mind?
Have a little patience with me as I make this point. And the point is that since 1996 all the way up to now, we have never, as a country, acknowledged or given voice or made public what was Osama bin Laden asking for. And what I understand and is these three points. One is that he really was in favor of toppling the very oppressive regimes in the Arab world, including Saudi Arabia, Egypt.
No doubt. He was the enemy of many of those, yes?
Right. And we're seeing right now the Arab Spring as the Arab Spring is doing what he was asking to be done long ago, and we've never acknowledged.
But he asked for a version, not the version that we've seen called for, at least, in the streets of Cairo. And he, he asked for it in blood, explicitly in blood, Fred.
You may be right, but my point is that we don't know that what he said was never made public, and that we never understood it, and that President Clinton said that he was just a terrorist, but he did not acknowledge his points at all. His other point was that there were three of them, and his other was that we as a country are considerably unbalanced in our support of what Israel does, and the third was that he wanted all foreign, especially U.S., troops off of the holy land of Saudi Arabia. But never was and is still not, we don't know what this is all about. We don't talk about the under part of what this is all about.
Fred, let us pick it up. I mean, I think we certainly do know because it was so murderously demonstrated. We certainly know the terrorism part. He definitely had an agenda, and some of it's had more conversation than the rest. People pushed back pretty hard because of the way he presented it. Let me hold that for just a moment. I'll take it to Jack Beatty and Lawrence Wilkerson. I want to get one more call, if I may, first. Sheikh Ahmed calling from Boston. Ahmed, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Yes, I actually want to give an advice that I kind of wanted to give in 2001 when I first came here, I think 2002, and obviously I did not have the opportunity to do so. Well, and that is that now the Americans, I would hope that they will emphasize the revolution, democratic, peaceful narrative that is ongoing now in the face of the symbol, the blood and the symbol, the narrative that is that remained alive, did not die. What died is only the leadership. So once we do it together, collaboratively, the new generation of Democrats or this new atmosphere, help it out and don't keep stick with the dictators and keep them silent. I mean, the use of the terrorism is no longer, I hope that is no longer going to be a leverage that dictators are using against the West to keep it silent.
Sheikh Ahmed, I appreciate your call as well, and forgive me, but let me take it right there. Don't stay with the dictators. Terrorism may have lost its appeal. Certainly, many have pointed out it's not bin Laden's picture on the placards. in the streets with these uprisings. Lawrence Wilkerson, I'll come to you first on, look, Bin Laden, he was a terrorist. He was the definition of a terrorist. He did have an agenda. Is there something, you know, when these things boil over, there may be something to learn even from a madman with blood on his hands.
Absolutely. There was a reason that Timothy McVeigh did what he did. There was a reason that the Unabomber did what he did. And it ill behooves all of us to not examine, at least, the incentives, the motivations, whether it be a loner domestic bomber or be someone like al-Qaeda or, indeed, Jamaa Islamiya, who are still alive and breathing in Southeast Asia. We need to know why these people do this sort of thing. And just reading their fatwas, I don't think, supports what we need to look at. What we need to look at is why and how successful are they in recruiting. We've got a world over there that's under 30. There's a lot of warriors potentially to be engaged, to be recruited. We need to take the incentive for recruiting those warriors away. We need to take their incentive away from being recruited.
Maybe Arabs are doing that instead of us right now in the streets themselves.
Right. That's right, and it's wonderful. And isn't it ironic that it's happening without the United States being there with F-16s and F-18s and carrier battle groups and so forth and so on? Or, on the other hand, ironic that it's happening without Zawahiri and Bin Laden doing it. In fact, it's happening as an exception to them. It's wonderful. Now let's don't pollute that and corrupt it by continuing the same policies we have in the past by supporting all these dictators who are, after all, part of our spawn in the world. So this is going to be challenging. This is going to be extremely difficult to back away from the old policies and implement new policies. And I would suggest that these new policies need to put the guns away for a while, because it needs diplomacy, it needs economic and financial assistance, it needs cultural and informational. I mean, it's our tools that have helped to aid and abet this whole process, everything from Twitter to Facebook to the Internet in general. This is the new 21st century, and we need to keep our powder dry and be able to react when and where our vital national interests say we have to. But basically, we need to let these people do their own thing and hope that, unlike Tom Brokaw suggested, that the majority of it turns out to be successful rather than unsuccessful. That is to say, we get reasonably representative and tolerant governments rather than something like the Muslim Brotherhood or the worst parts of Hamas or Hezbollah or whatever.
Jack, one call and I'll come to you. Waterloo, Iowa. James, you're on the air, James.
I just wanted to... first of all, say I'm glad to see that they did get him. I'm an Army veteran. When 9/11 happened, I was a civilian at that time, had already did military duty before, went back in because of this.
Wow.
I was in long-range surveillance, which that's kind of what I want to talk about. The military was actually put into a position through this long, drawn-out process of war in Iraq and in Afghanistan, and actually broke down to a point where they started to get rid of units, like the unit that I was in, which was has marks back to the Vietnam LERT, small operation teams. In turn, this is what ended up getting this man anyway.
Are you celebrating, James, today then? Are you celebrating or not? I'm trying to...
I am celebrating. I'm celebrating very much. What I'm saying is the one thing that did happen with this is, of course, that he did create and awaken a giant, which has always been here as far as our military forces go. They did begin to weaken us, though, make us second-guess some of our strategies, some of our doctrine that we had created for years. But long run, what we end up doing was, what he ended up doing was making us re-strategize our thinking, and we end up tracking him down with our smaller forces.
James, I appreciate your call. Jack Beatty there, you know, awakened a giant, took a toll on that giant too, maybe a toll on ourselves over these long wars, as caller James calls them.
Yes, his image of the giant reminds me of an image of George Kennan's, where in his book American Diplomacy, where he says that most of the time Americans don't pay attention to foreign affairs, but when something happens, States, and they're shaken up and awakened. He said they're like the primeval beast in the swamp that gets up and flashes around, and its tail flails around and knocks trees down, and, you know, it's a massive overreaction. He saw that throughout our history, and certainly we've seen it here. But, you know, these three callers, Chip, Mike, and, and James, and Maureen, her family, I mean, and Colonel Wilkerson, too, one feels toward them what Mike spoke of today, a quiet kind of thankfulness for the service of these people, and a sense of their you know, sort of running our business. I mean, being the sole people out at the spear point, and the injustice of that, and consequently the greater gratitude for their sacrifice.
Lawrence Wilkerson, we can't help feeling, though, or wanting to feel, that we've learned something as well here, that we've been tempered, that we've become wiser, that we can look out on the world with a more understanding eye, so that we're not just whacked out of the blue, which is the way, of course, it felt for millions of Americans on 9/11. We hope that we're wiser today than on that day.
I hope so. I call it resilience. Terrorism has been around for at least three millennia. We need to get it to a manageable level. We'll never eradicate it, and if we think we will, we're pipe dreaming, and we won't be resilient. We need to be resilient. We need to take things like this, let them roll off our back, go after the people that do it, arrest them, try them, hang them, whatever's necessary, use military force when it's necessary. But we don't need to stop our lives for it. After all, as someone just suggested, that was Bin Laden's purpose.
Those are words to keep in mind as we come up on what could be a season of retribution. We don't know, but let us hope we can hang right on to that insight today. Certainly, we've paid long and hard to gain what portion of it we have gained. Lawrence Wilkerson, Chief of Staff to former Secretary of State Colin Powell, retired U.S. Army Colonel. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Jack Beatty, what a near decade, and here we are with Osama bin Laden in the sea, somewhere far away. Lots to contemplate on this day. Thank you for joining us today, Jack.
Thank you, Tom.
Listeners, thank you as always for your insights. Thanks for being with us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.